This is Floss Weekly. I'm Doc Searles. This week, Catherine Druckmann and I talked to Melody Mechfessel of Observable.hq. They do data visualization, but that barely covers what the whole thing is. Data visualization and open source is a monstrously huge, young, and early topic. It is one of the best shows ever. Can't wait for you to hear it. And that is coming up next.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Floss Weekly, episode 677, recorded Wednesday, April 20th, 2022. Open source and data visualization. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Collide. That's Collide with a K. Get endpoint management that puts the user first. Visit KOLIDE.com/floss to learn more and activate a free 14-day trial today. No credit card required. And by NetFoundry, reinvent the network and eliminate the WAN by decoupling security from infrastructure to protect our applications and data with open source zero trust. Grab your free swag and free tier by going to netfoundry.io/twit. And by Compiler, an original podcast from Red Hat discussing tech topics, big, small, and strange. Listen to Compiler on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you listen to podcasts. Hello again, everyone, everywhere. I am Doc Searles, and this is Floss Weekly. Joined this week by Catherine Druckmann herself, who will now appear for those of you who are not visually impaired and listening to this on a podcast. How are you doing, Catherine?
For real. I'm okay. How are you?
Yeah, great.
You're on the move again.
I'm on the move again. For those who are not visually impaired, I'm in a library, a home library, where I sometimes stay in San Marino, California, where I came yesterday after two flights and pushing five bags, including two boxes from LAX to the very remote Uber lot there, which is an adventure. But we got it done. We got it done. So you're still in Houston. You generally don't leave.
No, especially not now.
Like one other place in Texas, as far as I know, is where you go.
Yeah. A couple places in Texas.
So you've done your homework better than I have. Yeah, so tell us what little you know, and then we'll fill out the rest of it.
It's data visualization, and data is data is the thing, right? Data is the thing. Data is ubiquitous. So, and data analysis is something that is an interest of mine, and something that's increasingly relevant in my work. And so, I'm interested. I'm particularly interested in this episode. I think it's going to be a good one.
I think so, too. So can't wait to get to it. But first, I have to let everybody know that this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Collide. That's Collide with a K. Collide is a new take on endpoint management that asks the question, how can we get end users more involved? This is in contrast to old school device management tools like MDM, which lock down your employees' devices without considering their needs or even attempting to educate them about the security of their laptop. Collide is built by like-minded security practitioners who in the past saw just how much MDM was disrupting their end users, often frustrating them so bad that they would throw up their hands and just switch to using their personal laptops without telling anyone. In that scenario, everyone loses. Collide, on the other hand, is different. Instead of locking down a device, Collide takes a user-focused approach that communicates security recommendations to your employees directly on Slack. After Collide is set up, device security turns from a black and white state into a dynamic conversation. This conversation starts with the end users installing the endpoint agent on their own through a guided process that happens right inside their first Slack message. From there, Collide regularly sends employees' recommendations when their device is in an insecure state. This can range from simple problems like the screen lock not being set correctly to hard to solve and nuanced issues like asking people to secure two-factor backup codes sitting in their downloads folder properly. And because it's talking directly to employees, Collide is educating them about the company's policies and how to best keep their devices secure using real tangible examples, not theoretical scenarios. Collide, cross-platform endpoint management for Linux, Mac, and Windows devices that puts end users first for teams that Slack. Get endpoint management that puts the user first. Visit collide.com/floss to learn more and activate a free 14-day trial today. No credit card required. Visit KOLIDE.com/floss today. And right now, you can get a goodie bag of Collide swag after signing up for a new trial today as their way of saying thank you. Our guest today is Melody McFessel. She's the CEO and co-founder of Observable, where she's building the future of data collaboration. She's passionate about helping humans thrive through collaboration, productivity, and insights. Before that, she was VP of engineering at Google, leading systems with a team of up to or more than 1,000 people, where she created DevOps practice for Google Cloud. She was responsible for large-scale systems, delivering successful outcomes for millions of users. And it goes on. I'm not going to read any more, but I'd rather just talk directly. So Melody, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Great. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
And where are you in the world? I know you have a dog.
I'm in San Francisco.
Oh, excellent. Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So you left Google and you started this thing. And so tell me about that transition and why it energizes you to be on your own with this thing.
That's a good question. I have to talk about my co-founder, Mike Bostock, because we met in, was it 2004? At Google, we were working together in search, and we were trying to design systems for engineers to test and improve the quality of search results at Google. And no surprise, it involved aggregating data sources, live traffic experiments, data from human raters, basically whatever data we could use to understand if this was going to make an improvement for search. And we started kind of talking about, well, how are we going to help the people that are trying to make these launch decisions around this data? And visualization at the time, we weren't really bringing that into the decision-making process. But fast forward, decades later, it seems, and Mike and I stayed friends. He went on to build an open source visualization library called D3. Very popular, super helpful for folks working with data. And I stayed at Google and I focused on how do you help developers and folks that are building and releasing software work well together? The tools, the processes, the people, the culture, with the whole focus on like, how do you help people be more productive? How do you empower them to write software and work with data? And so Mike had this idea coming out of D3, is there something there that we can build? And we came together with my view of like, okay, how do we help humans? How do we have technology be in service to them? And Mike's view of visualization is such an important part of making sense of data. And we wanted to build the place, which is Observable, a place where people can come together to do kind of quick and dirty, data analysis, ask questions of their data, all the way to build, fully formed data dashboards. So think about data science and business intelligence and collaboration all coming together in one spot. And a lot of that was grounded by Mike and I really believe in the power of open source and really the power of connecting people to work on software and learn from data together. A lot of what we're trying to do on Observable is create a place where people can learn and teach and share what they've created with the world. And then the next folks that come in can fork that, evolve it into something new. And I think that's really kind of the beauty of what happens in open source and what has been happening. So that's a lot, really long-winded way of saying, I believe in the fact that when you create a place where people can help each other, we're going to have more people in the world that are empowered to work with data. And I think that's a good thing. I think more people that don't have to be experts in data science or experts in data analysis, or maybe experts in JavaScript can come together and learn from their data and then be able to act on it once they've been able to communicate with each other and find those insights or those like aha surprise moments in their data. So that's what motivated me to go work on Observable with Mike and build our team.
I love your idea of empowering users to work with data. Maybe, you know, everybody can be a data scientist, let's say, even if you're not. And because data is everything today, isn't it? I mean, data is everybody needs to be able to analyze and get insight through massive amounts of data. Mm-hmm. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit more about why it's important for everybody to have these data skills and to have this easier to use, Observable is the thing, right? To have it an easier to use application that allows people to dig in themselves. Why is that important?
Well,
they're there are the obvious cases, but maybe there are some non-obvious use cases that you can talk about.
Yeah, I mean, I think what I see happening in companies and organizations today is that everyone kind of has their responsibility, their role to play in looking at an organization's data, right? Like maybe they're modeling it, maybe they're transforming it. But I think the power, if you look at like open source software development, right? The power I think is bringing people together with their backgrounds and expertise to find those surprises together. And I think, you know, it may sound silly, but like, you know, I think we as humans, when we can communicate and we can ask questions and we can connect with each other, we're going to find more things together. So a data analyst sitting with a spreadsheet by themselves, with not a lot of help from visualizations in the tools that are out there, is going to have a different experience than working with a data scientist and maybe a developer that's helping them build a thing that's going to help communicate more information about the data out into the organization. So, I think even like if you, really to me, one of the points is like, why is it important? Well, everyone has some insight, some expertise to contribute. And typically the way that happens today is it happens, you know, kind of in their lane, in their silo. What happens when we open that up? We can find all sorts of things together that we weren't able to do before. And to me, that is kind of the spirit of collaboration. When you can stay in flow with each other and you can ask these questions of the data and you can keep going, right? Like you don't hit a block, that leads to insights and findings that you just can't do on your own. So I think it's important that more people are empowered to work with data because of that. And I think that people have expertise, but they've been left out of the conversation around their organization's data because they're just not included. And so what happens when we include more people into that conversation? And it's not just data scientists and data analysts. It's like, think about students that are in school today. You know, you said it earlier before we started the show, you know, data is, it's increasing, it's complex, it's really difficult for us to make sense of it. What happens when more people have the tools to ask questions, to inform themselves, to be empowered, whether it's about like something in their personal life, something at work, something that they're interested in the world. So we're seeing a lot of people on Observable share their, you know, analysis and their creations on a whole bunch of topics. You know, you look at the pandemic, looking at topics in the world that we all care about, this kind of concept of a data citizen, you know, global data citizen. So I think it's important because to me, it's about empowerment. It's about being able to ask those questions ourselves, be able to learn, and then be able to share what we've learned with each other.
That's really cool. I did actually do some poking around of your website and in particular your community site. And there's sort of a showcase that I think everyone should go check this out. It's observablehq.com/community. And it allows people to show off the work that they're doing. And I think that's you, what I'm getting from what you're describing is the importance of the community that you've built working together to advance everyone's cause, whatever that may be. But what I'm seeing that's most interesting is just the varied uses, and the varied purposes. I mean, people are visualizing all kinds of data, and I mean, I could pick, you know, so many that we could probably spend an hour on each. And I just wondered if there were any particular ones you wanted to talk about, or a specific case study or story of one particular project that you know, was particularly advanced using this data analysis.
Yeah, thanks for asking that. The community use cases are all public. So anyone can come to Observable and they can fork them. They can add their own data. They can start evolving them. You know, you have the ability to come in and kind of like edit directly on a notebook with another creator. And you can also comment and ask, you know, questions and suggestions. So there are multiple ways that you can engage with the content that's being created. You know, the community has been growing. I think we're like over 500,000 monthly active users now. And there's such a diversity. Mm-hmm. Like you just saw, you know, heads of data science at organizations, students that are creating visualizations, professors that are using notebooks and sharing them publicly to teach everything from like data visualization to architecture to biology. I'm like surprised every day, but I think you kind of hit the nail on the head, which is when you have a platform where people can interact with data in an easier way and then share that, there's no limits to what they can do. I mean, I think like every day, like I go and I learn something new that has been created by someone on the site. I mean, I'm based in California, and you know, there are wildfires. And so we see people, you know, looking at wildfire data and doing analysis and sharing it. In COVID, there's been a lot of analysis that folks have done to kind of dig in and ask questions of what's happening in the world, because it affects all of us. So you can really kind of come and be inspired and then ask questions yourself of, okay, like what data am I, what are the things that are going on in the world that I'm interested in? And how can I find something that is going to inspire me to go create something and then share that? And this kind of awesome virtuous like cycle, this beautiful cycle that can happen of people sharing and then people building on each other's work. And that openness that can happen out in community, which I think is really magical. So for me, like every day, there's some new surprise of something that's been created on an Observable of someone working with data. There's some really interesting things too, Catherine, that don't see the public, that are happening in our team's environment. You know, people working with private data to build dashboards and make decisions and empower, you know, hundreds of folks in their organizations. Stitch Fix is one. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that service. It's like
online. I am. My shirt actually came from Stitch Fix.
Oh, no way. That's incredible. Yes. That is incredible. Yeah. That's so great.
So indirectly, I'm already a user of your software.
Yeah. So, you know, the developers were working with the data scientists to try and build artifacts, dashboards. And what they found was that when they were able to bring them into Observable and empower the data scientists to ask questions of the data and create things, like they had more autonomy, they move faster, and they were able to make decisions faster in their organization. So they started out really small with like a team of, I don't know, 3 or 4 people. And now, you know, hundreds of data scientists with dashboards that are reaching, you know, lots of people in the organization to learn about what's happening within Stitch Fix, you know, inventory and warehousing and, you know, the algorithms that they use. And I think they, you know, they have over 100 data sources that they're pulling from. And like, how do you make sense of that? And how do you make sense of that in a way that helps people move faster and find those surprises? So those things are really cool to learn from as well, because I think they're kind of changing the way in which people are working with data in a more collaborative way is changing the things that they're creating. And so that you see the same thing in the community that you just pointed out. But I think visualization is a really important part of that.
Yeah. I'm wondering, so, you know, looking through this. So in a previous life, I was a historian. That's my education.
Ah,
nice. And I'm thinking of all the, I studied decorative arts history. I know it's super relevant to open source technology, but you know, but I'm thinking of all the uses, you know, for this. Like, wow, if I had been, you know, had this in grad school, cool. I was thinking of a woman I know who got a PhD in Spanish, and her field of study was love letters throughout various periods of history. And this type of data analysis was key to her work because you're looking at the frequency of certain words over time, or, you know, and grouping them by a decade, or, you know, that sort of thing. And I'm just kind of amazed. But what I'm wondering in particular is how you really engage and build this community. Because again, it is so diverse, you know, how do you identify users to bring them in? Or is that just something that happens organically?
Most of our growth, I mean, we're a pretty early stage platform. Most of our growth has been organic. So people hear about something, or we have notebooks that, you know, go viral. People hear about it, they come, you know, they check it out. Maybe they don't create a notebook in that moment. But I think the creations that the community are publishing and sharing with the world are really inspiring people to engage and learn database and collaborate with others around data. So yeah, just to be direct, most of it has happened organically. I think one thing that's drawing folks to the site is, you know, there are a ton of live examples. So it's this huge library, right, of fully functioning interactive notebooks, right? And those notebooks include visualization. And, you know, there's a library for D3. There are examples of Vega Lite. And then last year, we launched another open source data visualization option, which is called Observable Plot. And I don't have a lot of time in my job, right? So some of it's about like, you know, D3, there's so much to learn and you can do so much. It's so powerful, but it does, you know, it takes time. For me in my job, you know, working with our customers and working with our community and our design and engineering team, I can come in with Observable Plot and I can create a visualization in like less than 5 minutes. Now, you know, I think the power of that is that if we reduce the barrier, if we lower the barrier of what you have to learn to make sense of your data through visualization, then it becomes more approachable, more accessible, and hopefully more social, because more people are connecting on a broader range of topics and creating those cool visualizations to say like, oh my gosh, like you can see something here that you couldn't see when you were looking at tabular data. And that to me is really powerful, right? Like visualization itself, it taps into our human visual system. We just see things intuitively that we're just not going to see in like rows of numbers, right? Rows and columns of numbers. And so, you know, kind of the range on the platform of people can create a visualization, you know, a chart in, you know, less than, you know, 5 minutes, or they can take that idea and carry it through and do something very complex, means that they have this whole range of options, you know, available to them at their fingertips. And that to me is also like the power of open source. Like, how do you open it up for more people with a broad range of skills to be able to do the thing that they want to do, right? And then act on it. And like Observable Plot is for me. D3, yeah, again, Mega Lite, incredible. I'm sure, you know, you're familiar with like, you can do so much, but some people don't have the time, right? Like there's deadlines, you got to get stuff done and take action on the thing that you found in the chart and in the visualization.
Yeah, I think this is very cool. Do you have any secret sauce about how you sort of foster, I don't know, maybe a sense of camaraderie or interactivity among your users on this platform?
Yeah, you know, I really love like attitude of gratitude. I think you know, I don't take for granted that people come and share their work. So So for me, it's about saying thank you and, you know, creating environments for people to connect with each other, to learn from each other. So we do that through meetups. We have an ambassador program. You saw some of the creators, to bring those folks together to, you know, they kind of riff and work on special projects together. And, it's really fun to see. And of course, like for us as a platform, like they provide early feedback on what's working and what's not, which is super helpful as we're building Observable. So that part is, you know, that's a huge gift for us. And it's a gift that they come and they share. So to me, it's about recognition, thank yous, meetups, you know, sharing their work as broadly as we can, and connecting them with other folks that maybe they can collaborate with on future projects. And, you know, for many folks, this is the work that they're sharing, which is contributing to their career and what they want to do in the world. And so being in support of that is really important for us. And yeah, it's just a, it's to me, it's a blast. Like if anyone wants to go and check out, you know, observablehq.com explore or community, which you already pointed out, Catherine, you can just see so many different examples of what people can be inspired by and start from, in the public and the free part of Observable.
Yeah, what I'm seeing, it seems, looks really cool, and I could nerd out about it all day, but I think I need to hand it over to Doc because I'm hogging the microphone and I think he needs to get in a few words.
I love what you're doing with the microphone. And these are great questions. I've got one or two that I'll get to after letting you all know that this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by NetFoundry. Networking has traditionally been handled by dedicated teams and personnel. You could say network security has been deemed too important to leave in the hands of developers. One of our sponsors, NetFoundry, believes differently. Secure connectivity is too important to be taken away from developers and has forced dependency and stifled innovation and business velocity or unnecessary trades off security for those benefits. Therefore, NetFoundry created and maintains OpenZiti. That's open Z-I-T-I, providing an open source, free and easy way for the world to embed zero trust networking into anything. It provides everything you need to spin up a truly private zero trust overlay network in minutes across anything, directly in your app, on any device, or in any cloud, built on principles of extensibility, flexibility, and scalability. Attacks from insecure networks can become a thing of the past. External network attacks, including DDoS attacks, brute force, credential stuffing, CVE, or zero-day exploits, BGP hacks, phishing, and more can be stopped. This is truly zero trust of all networks. No need for expensive and risky reactive patching. Agnostic design patterns ensure you only need commodity internet with outboard ports without needing networking engineering skills to implement it. Say goodbye to complex firewall rules, inbound ports, public DNS, static network access controls, and VPNs. Eliminate the tug of war between developers and security. The former can work programmatically with software, while the latter have isolated apps driven by policy, visibility, and logs they require. Zero Trust is a journey to start wherever you need based on your priorities. OpenZiti offers numerous SDKs, tunneling apps, for popular OSs and edge routers in cloud marketplaces. If you don't want to host OpenZiti, use the NetFoundry SaaS, including free forever tiers for up to 10 endpoints. Head to netfoundry.io/twit to grab some free swag, learn more, and get started. That's netfoundry.io/twit and get your free swag and free tier today. Okay, so Melody, it occurs to me, listening to your answers to Catherine's questions and where you're going and how 500,000 already, it strikes me that you're becoming for data visualization maybe kind of what SurveyMonkey became for surveys. Is that, and whether or not that's true, I'm wondering where you go downstream from here, because it seems like you're early in a really big journey that could include like everybody. I mean, I want data visualization. I'm not a hacker, right? But I have a lot of personal data that's relevant, and it's often clouds. I want to suck it out of there through some API. I don't have it yet. So tell us where that all goes.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, I think I've been inspired by what GitHub did for open source development, creating a place for people to come together, to meet each other, to connect, to work on projects that they care about, that they're passionate about. And that, you know, if you look over the last, decade plus, right? Like most of software today relies on open source software or is built on top of it. Like the example I gave of Observable Plot, it's built on top of D3 and it's open source, this like chain of open source tooling. I think if you look out in the world, right, there's 65 million plus developers and growing, 5 million plus data scientists and analysts, 750 million like Excel users, right? 800 million Google Sheets users. Like that's all data. Those folks are all working with data. And that doesn't even talk about all the collaborators and this idea of being a global data citizen. And so for us at Observable, we want to meet people where they are with the skills that they have, and they can continue to grow those skills on the platform through tutorials, through learning from other folks. They can find like the best examples of working with, data, whether it's like a sunburst or a dependency graph or a force directed graph. They can also like see new visualizations that are kind of like bleeding edge. I think the field of data visualization is just getting started, right? I think we're going to see all kinds of new things. And the simple charts, like they have a very important place in the world. So, imagine a place on the web where people can come together, work with data, share it, publish it, fork an example, and like keep going. And to me, that's our mission, is to help everyone make sense of the world with data together. Keywords, everyone, backgrounds, skill sets, together is the other keyword, so that we can share and teach from each other. We can do that in a positive way. We can do that in an inclusive way. So yeah, I think my dream, like wave a magic wand, everyone has the skills that they need to work with data, and that visualization is a big part of it. Could we just find those surprises, those like, oh my gosh, moments? And if we can do that together, we're going to move faster, but we're also probably going to have more fun and more joy doing it together than doing it by ourselves. I don't know about you, but like, hitting my head against a brick wall to try and figure something out. If I pair with someone else, I get to the answer a lot faster. So yeah, I think I hadn't thought about SurveyMonkey. I'll have to think about that. But yeah, I think creating that place for folks is important.
Yeah, I'm not sure they have an open source story, but it just seemed to be their growth path is pretty quick. And suddenly everybody could do surveys. I'm reminded here a little bit, this may seem irrelevant, but I remember back in the early 80s, one of the established comedians back there, and there were a lot of new comedy clubs out of nowhere. There were comedy clubs in every town. And this guy said, 20 years ago, there were 100 comedians and 5 of them are really good. Now there are 5,000 comedians and 5 of them are really good. That's not happening in the digital world. There used to be a certain number of great photographers. Now there are a zillion great photographers. There are a zillion people doing podcasts, or a zillion people doing development. You had some great statistics about developers and how many people are developing now. So I want to ask about two verticals that I'm involved with, so in different ways. Okay. And one is journalism, and the other is academics in the classroom. And I'm wondering to what degree your tool or just even your field is involved with that. I was in Jay Rose's class at NYU and working with his class 3 or 4 years ago, and already he was bringing in people to teach data visualization to master's degree journalists. And I'm wondering anyway about those two verticals and what you see happening there.
Yeah, that's a great example. So data journalism, observables being used, by Dana journalism teams. We have a great case study you can come to the site and see on the Marshall Project. The Marshall Project is using Observable to create data tools to empower more reporters to look at data related to the criminal justice system and people that are incarcerated. And then it's not just the relationship and sharing data with the reporters, it's also with the readers. But Observable is being used at the Chicago Reporter, The Economist, the LA Times, the Marshall Project, and more data journalism teams are coming to the platform to use it. And I think if you think about this idea of like topics relevant for the world, getting to the insight or the story to share about the data in a quick way, and then empowering people to interact with that, that's like a prime use case, right? For using visualization. If you look at every news outlet and media outlet, there's some visualization in there somewhere at some point in the story. And so it's interesting you bring up, the comedic example and the photography example, because I think there are in the world that we live in more citizens that are feeling empowered to tell stories, right, outside of those traditional journalism and media outlets. And I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens with that dynamic in the world. More access to data. Of course, we have to understand and trust the data and the provenance associated with the data. But yeah, I think, again, like if I could wave my magic wand, I would want not just the major outlets, but local outlets to be more empowered to work with data to get to those stories faster that are relevant, for those communities. So, the second point that you asked was about teaching. So Observable is being used at universities. UC Berkeley met with a professor over there a number of years ago using Observable to teach data visualization. UC Berkeley, Stanford, MIT, all sorts of universities, and starting to be used in high schools to teach topics, because I think it is so easy to create an exercise to have students come and fork it and learn interactively with the data and with the visualization and Observable, and then come back together and kind of like see what they learn, see what they find, see what visualizations that they've used to, as part of that learning process. And the full range is kind of, again, it just fascinates me. Like, it's not just, you think, okay, it's JavaScript, it's working with data, it's visualization. So people are going to be using it to teach data visualization and computer science and, JavaScript. It's not, it's being used like on topics related to architecture and biology and, creative coding and art. But it's just wild to see the applicability across so many different verticals. We have companies in the tech industry, we have companies in biopharma, we have companies in retail. Like, I think the expressiveness of JavaScript, use the libraries that work for you, have multiple visualization options at your fingertips. Like, it's kind of crazy to imagine what people are going to do and what people can create. And that's the part of the platform, the expressiveness and the level of interactivity that really inspires me, because who knows what people are going to do. I think that's when like interesting things can happen. I've been really excited and encouraged by what we've seen with journalism and with education, and what those, what those folks are creating and sharing with the world. It's super inspiring.
So for people who haven't tried it out, and I'm one of them, I've looked at it, but I haven't actually tried it out. What are the sort of minimum skills I need to get started? How do I get started working with data and with your platform?
Yeah. So we have, multiple ways. We have a collection of example data sets that you can work with. So if you don't have a data set that you at your fingertips, we have a collection of some sample data sets. So that's kind of one place to start. You could start with a sample data set and you can attach it as a file, or you can connect to a database if you already have data. You can connect to live spreadsheets. So whether that's Microsoft Excel or Google Sheets, any sort of cloud connected file. So data is kind of the first step. What data are you interested in working with? And there's multiple ways that you can do that in the platform. The other angle that you can come at is you can find an example that's kind of interesting to you and you could fork it. And then you could start to look at what someone has created with it. So what data is attached, what visualization they're using, and start to sort of look at a live example as a way to learn. We have a lot of tutorials on the learning part of the website that you can walk through. So if you're a person that likes to learn interactively, you can walk through exercises and tutorials to get started. Or if you want to, you could just come and create an account and start with a new notebook. And we have probably, a bunch of different templates, which are starting points for you to play around with and get started. Those are all just like multiple options. You want to start with a template? Great. You want to start from scratch? Great. You're going to need to be familiar with JavaScript, a bit of JavaScript. You don't need to be a JavaScript expert, but we're a JavaScript first platform, you know, biggest language on the web, fastest growing language. So there's a little bit of, you know, getting familiar with JavaScript. Again, we have some, you know, some guidance for that. But those are kind of the basics. So templates, start with a tutorial, start with a live example, maybe be inspired by some of the sample data stats, and then you can kind of get started in the notebook. We have what we call kind of code snippets, which are just like kind of starting points that you can select and insert into your notebook so that you don't have to start from scratch, which I think is really important. But there's all kinds of ways to get started, Catherine.
I'm wondering also if, in a kind of a weird way, this is a way to introduce more people to writing code.
Sneaky, yeah.
Like, because the same way mission. That you feel. Yeah, is that your especially you know young women and. The same way that you say everyone needs to know how to work with data, I think everyone needs to write a little bit of code. You don't have to be a programmer, but I think that everybody in the world today needs to be able to write at least a little bit of code.
Yeah.
And this might be a good way.
You got it.
World domination.
Pretty sneaky. You know, like I've been in tech my entire career. I started writing code at a startup as my first job out of college, and then, you know, enterprise software, you know, the first business banking systems, online business banking systems, and, you know, cloud and bubbles and all this sort of stuff. But, you know, one of my dreams and one of the things that I really believe in is empowering more people to work with technology and to open up, you know, the field of tech and working with data to more folks. And I think there's lots of ways we can do that. And one of the ways we can do that is break down the barriers of, you know, the arrogance associated with like software developer and the identities associated with those, to empower more people to be able to create. And I think there's a lot of ways that we can do that. And one of the ways I think that we want to do that at Observable is help people learn the things that are just starting points in a way that's really open and inclusive and like helpful, like help them, you know, learn the thing in a way that is not, not intimidating. And yeah, I want to create and live in a world where more people, can write code and they have the tools, to be able to get the assistance and the help that they need to do that. You don't have to know a ton of JavaScript. And you can build those JavaScript skills over time. I mean, I believe you can learn languages on your own if you have helpful tutorials to do that. So yeah, part of it is like, let's empower people to have those skills to answer their own questions and to get the task or the thing done that they want to get done and have that level of autonomy and independence and like just path where they can keep going and keep learning if they want to. So yeah, it's a little bit of my sneaky dream. Mike and I both would love, to help contribute to teaching and creating a place where people can teach and learn the skills that they need to work with data.
I love everything.
Thank you so much
for
that. Yeah. I didn't want to get up on my soapbox in this like podcast, but yeah, I want to see that happen.
I'm pro soapbox.
Yeah.
Oh, I think Doc's muted.
I have a loud keyboard, so I'm writing mute here in the house. I'm not familiar with. It's a borrowed keyboard too. 1,000 years ago, not long after I flunked statistics in college because I didn't get along with the teacher, but I kept the book. I developed the one and only algorithm I ever did, and it was toward predicting future results in radio station ratings. And it was pretty accurate. It was a lot of fun. But I had no access to anything like this. It was before anybody wrote any code, that wasn't COBOL or something. But I'm wondering about the heuristics of this, especially for people working, say, with an algorithm where you're doing the forward logic of if we do this, then that's going to happen. If we do this, we tweak this, then that's going to happen. And having a visual result at the far end be part of that. And both the strategic advantage of that and the fun one can have with it. And I'm wondering if this is the kind of thing, I'm sure this is the kind of thing that's already going on. It may even be in your use case stories, but it strikes me that this isn't just about let's show some cool graphs or charts or fun things that help visualize a thing at a moment in time, but rather how do we chart our course through the future strategically using this tool? And I'm wondering what you might have to say or share about that.
There's a couple of quotes that that inspire me. So yes, first of all, go back to your algorithm point. There are many notebooks on Observable of folks visualizing algorithms. And think about how do you decide which algorithm to use? Like, how do you know what's optimal for the problem that you're trying to solve? And you can use visualization to understand the differences between algorithms and to make a better decision about what algorithm you're going to include in the software that you're writing. So folks have done that on Observable. I think that's an amazing use case because software development, there's so much complexity that's overwhelming us. And that complexity comes with a cost. Think about how we as humans, developers, data citizens, analysts, scientists, whatever our role may be, teachers, we can bring visualization in to help our own understanding and to help learn and make better decisions in whatever we're doing. I'm going to try and find this quote. Nancy Levinson, she said, we're attempting to build systems that are beyond our ability to intellectually manage. Like there's so much that we have to understand that we need assistance. We need aids to do that. And sorry to quote here, but like, I think that there's another quote that I wanted to find, which really kind of demonstrate it for me, which is, this is the quote I want to find, Brett Victor, people understand what they can see. If a programmer cannot see what a program is doing, she can't understand it. And that's where the power of visualization comes into play, not just for programming, but for data, for anything that we're doing. If we can use visualization and apply it to a problem that we are working on or a task that we're trying to get done, we're going to be able to learn and see things and make better decisions through that interaction. And hopefully doing that interaction with other people, right? Because then you have the collective like networked mind of the humans that are interacting and then using the visualization to kind of keep going. So for me, I think I don't know what, you know, none of us know, right? What's going to happen in 5 to 10 years. But I really want more of us to be empowered to work with data and to be able to see visualization really as a tool for thinking. It's a way to help us think. And it is not like the bright, shiny, like you said, like the pretty picture. It's like the means to that greater understanding, right? It's like, it's that process that we go through that we become more informed, we deepen our knowledge, we make better decisions, we're able to communicate more effectively with our colleagues, the visualization can bring into it. And to me, that's like, that's, you know, chef's kiss. That's what it's all about.
You know, it occurs to me while you're talking, and this is such a rich conversation, I'm loving it, that as human beings, we're visual animals. We're not only visual, we walk upright, and we're moving through the world. We are ambulatory. And so much of that is forward thinking. It's anticipatory. We're looking for stuff. We're wary of stuff. We're also making, you know, we're making animals. And we've got an opposable thumb and we're tool makers. And so we're doing these things. We're in some ways, we're sitting still and making stuff. And in other ways, we're going out in the world and anticipating toward what happens because we're making stuff. And now we're in this digital place. And this is new. We've only been here for a couple decades, maybe even one decade, if we just include everybody's on a mobile phone that does a lot. There's maybe one decade into that world. And we could all make movies and we could all do all kinds of stuff that we couldn't do before. But we're still new to this world. And how do we navigate our way in this thing? And we need to do this intelligently, right? And it sounds to me like you've got a great tool, a great your platform is one great way to, for the smart people who know coding and math and what an algorithm is and stuff like that to really make something happen here. It's just really exciting.
Yeah, it is. I mean, more people are coming into DataViz and working with data every day. We did a community survey and found, you know, most users on the platform are, you know, pretty new to working with data. So more people are being drawn to create things and to share them. And so I think you're right. Like, we are creators. We are creative. Working with data is by nature a creative, iterative activity, right? We don't know what questions we're going to ask of the data until we get into it, and it evolves and we keep going. And if we can do that with other people, I think we're much more powerful. I think one of the challenges with technology is that it can feel isolating. And I think, you know, what open source did was change that, like created connection in new and interesting ways. And I think you're right. Like, if we can come together and connect and teach and learn from each other in positive, inclusive ways and bring more and more people into the fold, like that's magic, right? That's how, you know, who knows what we're going to create. But I think as it relates to data is going to continue to increase. The complexity is going to continue to increase. Visualization has such a critical role to helping us as humans think and interact with data in new and interesting ways. And I'm really excited to see like the new visual forms that are going to be created by people who are just coming into the industry and what they're going to do to share those and make those available out in the world to, you know, millions and millions of people.
Wow. So much here. I've probably given our time one more question after this, but I first have to let people know that this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Compiler, an original podcast from Red Hat discussing tech topics, big, small, and strange. Compiler comes to you from the makers of Command Line Heroes, another of our sponsor, and is hosted by Angela Andrews and Brent Simoneau. Technology can be big, bold, bizarre, and complicated. Compiler unravels industry topics, trends, and the things you've always wanted to know about tech through interviews with the people who know it best. On their show, you will hear a chorus of perspectives from the diverse communities behind the code. Compiler brings together a curious team of Red Hatters to tackle big questions in tech, like what is technical debt? What are tech hiring managers actually looking for? And do you have to know how to code to get started in open source? Episode 2 covers what can video games teach us about edge computing. The internet is a patchwork of international agreements and varying infrastructure, but there's something coming to change the ways we connect. And this episode of Compiler Hosts explore what edge computing could mean for people who enjoy video games and what this form of entertainment could teach us about the technology. Episode 9, how are tech hubs changing? Traditionally, if someone wanted a career in tech, they had to make the move to a tech hub, a city packed with startups and talent. But things are starting to change. The hosts of Compiler speak to a few of the change makers who are thinking outside of the typical and social dimensions we've come to associate with innovations. And I've listened to these, and they're actually very helpful. So I really suggest listening to them. Learn more about Compiler at red.ht/twit. New episodes are out now. Go and download them at any time, and be sure to check back for new shows. Listen to Compiler on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you listen to podcasts. We'll also include a link on this episode's show page. My thanks to Compiler for their support. So, because every company in the Valley is still new, I think, you know, because, but it seems to me you're still very early in where this thing goes. So tell us a bit about what observable business, what your business is, how you make money, and where you see this going as time goes on in the world that we're busy making.
Yeah, absolutely. We, we started with this free tier for people to just sign up and use it for free, get access to examples, publish what they share. We have two paid tiers. We have our teams tier. So that's for groups of people coming together to work against their private data. And a lot of what we see is people kind of kick the tires in the free tier, and they sign up for a free trial, and then they bring it into their company and start using it for work. Because of the expressiveness of observable, a lot of folks use those initial trial as a way to understand how they're going to use the product, how they're going to work together, how they're going to form projects, connecting to their data. And then typically what we see is the teams expand to bring more people into the conversation on observable, doing that quick and dirty exploratory analysis, and then all the way through to build operational dashboards. What we find is that as growth continues in the organization, folks then want to sign up for our enterprise tier, which really focuses on increased support, security, privacy, and how you can scale data collaboration within an organization using observable. So our business model is really, we're a SaaS, web-based collaborative platform. And it's been really great to see that self-service kind of just signing up for a trial and starting to use it within organizations against private data. We've got some customer stories listed on the website. So if you want to learn more about what people are doing in private, companies that I mentioned like Stitch Fix, the Marshall Project for the journalism use case, Sumedevant, which is a biopharma company, and much more. Some of the universities using us, you can check that out. But yeah, it's really easy to sign up. The 30-day trial is a great way to get started on Observable. And yeah, we're just continuing to grow our team, our company, to provide great support for the community and to provide great support for our customers and to keep, what we call kind of lowering the floor around working with data. So we just added SQL cells into the notebook. We have new templates that people can get started from, and we're adding new features to the platform all the time. So yeah, we love to get feedback from our community. You can check out our forum for questions, getting started. And yeah, you're right. We are just getting started. We're really very encouraged by the community on Observable and this, what we believe to be the largest library of data visualizations on the web that people can get started from. And so a lot of folks that are, giving us their credit card and signing up for our paid product, they come because of the community and they come because of all the examples that they can get started with. And so we're really in support of that and want to keep making the platform, you know, better every day. So yeah, hopefully you can check it out.
I'm very optimistic for your future. And you brought up GitHub as an inspiring example earlier. I think if you follow that path, you'll be doing really well. We always close with a few standard questions. One is, the first, of course, is just, is there anything we haven't asked you would have liked us to have asked you could work in before we're off?
I think Catherine kind of got it. I think that
she does those things. Yeah,
she got it. Like, she saw through. I think that I really believe that technology should be in service to us as humans. And I think that with the right support, there shouldn't be any boundaries to what people can do in technology. And so for me, I really believe that, you know, as many people as we can empower to work with data, the richer our conversations are going to be, the more we're going to be able to communicate with each other. And so I'm going to keep on this mission to lower the barrier of working with data to as many folks from as many skill sets, from as many backgrounds, underrepresented communities, to be empowered to work with data. So yeah, I just want to give some thank yous to Catherine for bringing that up earlier.
Oh yeah. Well, you're very welcome. Thank you for such great answers.
So the final two are, what is your favorite text editor in scripting language?
VI. Vim, does that date me?
No.
That's
eternal.
All day, every day.
It's eternal. It's so, like, you know, the Vim Emacs or like the programming languages, you know, the philosophical debates, like, I don't know. It's just, we can learn any of it. It's fine. It's all good.
And so for scripting, same answer, basically.
I'm sorry?
Oh, for scripting.
Scripting language.
Yeah, God, I don't know. It's been so long. Like Perl, and I've just been in the JavaScript world for so long. I don't remember the last time I wrote a script. God, it's been embarrassing.
Yeah, JavaScript counts, doesn't it?
I was going to say, that's an interesting way of putting it.
What?
I think I've been in the artistic world for a long time. I forgot how to draw, you know, sort of. Anyway, that's great. I love that. So Melody, this has been absolutely a great show. I really appreciate it. It's been the back channel has been full of flattery. So share that with you too.
Thank you.
A lot of wows.
Thank you so much. Such an honor to be here to speak with you both. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, likewise, we'll have to have you back and telling us about all that's happened in the meantime, because I'm sure it's not going to be small.
Yes.
Yeah. We need a follow up.
Yeah, we do. So thanks for being with us, Melody.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
So Catherine, great job. Gold star.
Oh, okay. This was a really fun one for me. I was encouraged to see the evidence of the collaboration in their community. I was checking it out, you know, in preparation, and I saw this and I thought, wow, I mean, they've really got, you know, a diverse group of projects here. I encourage everybody to check it out. It's some really cool stuff. And I rarely get this enthusiastic, to be honest. I'm usually fairly even tempered about these things, but this is really cool.
Well, it makes me totally want to get in it, because you know, part of my mission in life is to get people in charge of their own data, and most of that's hidden right now. Most of that is not ours; it's somebody else's, and it really ought to be ours. I want all my Google location data, all my phone company location data. I have all this data that comes out as KML files from my little GPS I carry with me when I'm shooting photos out of airplanes. The GPS knows where I am. I want to coordinate those. I want to see, do I shoot more Grand Canyon than I shoot of arches? I flew over both of those yesterday and shot pictures of them. I mean, these are small things, but they're part of my life. There's health data that I get off off my watch and my phone. And there's just all kinds of stuff that's in our life, but we don't know what to do with it. Or if we do know what to do with it, we're not as well informed about it as we could be. You know, I mean, there's just so many ways to, I mean, imagine if everybody could visualize their television watching habits and, you know, and then look at how much they're paying for the different channels. You know, what does that say? I mean, that's an interesting thing. That's a big part of our lives now. Everybody talks about what shows they watch.
Yeah, the theme of the whole conversation was empowerment, I think. And can be so many things. That can be especially empowerment of individuals. So,
yeah.
Through massive amounts of data.
So anything to plug? We always have us to plug.
We can plug ourselves. You can listen to us on another podcast where we don't typically talk about data, but maybe we could. But we do talk about empowering individuals quite a bit. So if that's something that appeals to you, you might want to join us.
So Catherine does a great job with that. She is. It's unclear who produces this show. That's another question, topic on the back channel. We all got to get together for that. But Catherine definitely produces that one. So thanks a lot. So I need to let you know that next week we have Ethan Zuckerman on. He's an old friend, and Ethan has done everything, and he has amazing things to say about everything as well. So I want you to tune in for that one. So until then, I'm Doc Searles. This has been Floss Weekly, and we will see you next week.
Hey, I'm Rod Pyle, editor of Ad Astra magazine, and each week I'm joined by Tarek Malik, the editor-in-chief over at space.com, in our new This Week in Space podcast. Every Friday, Tarek and I take a deep dive into the stories that define the new space age. What's NASA up to? When will Americans once again set foot on the moon? And how about those samples from the Perseverance rover? When are those coming home? What the heck has Elon Musk done now? In addition to all the latest and greatest in space exploration, we'll take an occasional look at bits of spaceflight history that you probably never heard of, and all with an eye towards having a good time along the way. Check us out in your favorite podcatcher.